questions do you and I have to ask? How did we get this money?
OPEC production limits, helping to drive down the price of oil from $20.50 a barrel in the opening days of 1990 to a mere $13.60 a barrel by summer.
The Nina, the Pinta, and the whatchamacallit, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Landed right on us.
Without cry. Why? You can get all the film and the footage of all the carnage in Los Angeles, but you can show me no footage of any damage in Iraq. And all you show me is some surgical strike. Now, 1 year later, it comes out that these so-called surgical strikes were mixed in.
August 2, 1990. Saddam Hussein's forces crashed through the defenses of oil-rich Kuwait. In fear of an Iraqi invasion into Saudi Arabia, the United States and her coalition allies poured into the Arabian Peninsula to form a deterrent that would be known as Desert Shield. The result was a series of diplomatic talks, negotiations, and counter-negotiations that rapidly declined into a no-hope situation. On August 17, 1991, Desert Shield became Desert Storm. The conflict was witnessed by millions through the eye of CNN and the BBC, showing propaganda of the systematic eradication of Saddam's forces by a coalition far superior in technological, political, and economic power. However, what was little known was that from the outset the war was engineered, controlled, and manipulated by an elite group. A group which had created the illusion of a man with power at the head of a million-strong army on the verge of going nuclear. A man who had gained control over one-fifth of the world's oil overnight. However, in reality, he was merely a pawn, in amongst many pawns, just a puppet in a grand master plan, with the Gulf War as a well-orchestrated stepping stone. The orchestrators of the war were by no means strangers to controlling major world events. In fact, they have done so for centuries. From the shadows, they have engineered every major war, revolution, and recession. They control everything you read, everything you hear, and everything you see. They have managed to indoctrinate an entire populace to their way of thinking and have infiltrated key positions in places of authority. And it is from the shadows that they have created a new political order, a new economic order, and more sinister, a new religious order. Their ultimate aim is total global domination, and they will stop at nothing to reach their goal. The goal that was outlined in a speech given by former President of the United States, George Bush.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
However, the origins of this global plan were not created in the offices of the White House. In reality, their roots lay in another war. This time, the year is 1095. And the place, Clermont, France. Century Europe was ruled by the church, which held a firm grip on the hearts and minds of the people. This power enabled Pope Urban II to wage war on the Muslim Caliphate and crusade in what he called a war of the cross to recapture the land of Jerusalem. It had been under Muslim rule since the year 637, but in 1099 this rule was brought to a bloody and sudden end. In the name of the cross, women were raped and murdered. Children were put to the sword, and it is said that blood ran in the streets knee-high to the horses. Out of this land of bloodshed and terror, a group of men arose. Men that would stop at nothing to get what they wanted, no matter what the cost. 20 years after Jerusalem was taken, the Dome of the Rock was seized by a group of warrior monks calling themselves the Knights of the Temple of Solomon, or more simply, the Knights Templars. In Jerusalem, the Templars began to deviate further and further away from the practices of Christianity. They learnt the secret arts of the Kabbalah, an ancient form of Jewish magic, along with its dark rites and rituals. The Jews had learnt the arts from the pagans of ancient Egypt during the times of enslavement to the Pharaoh and developed them into Babylon at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. In 1307, King Philippe of France arrested them for charges of denial of Christ, homosexuality, and idol worship, as well as magic. In 1314, Pope Clement V declared all Templars as heretics to Christianity, ordering all their properties to be seized. Their leader, Jacques de Morlaix, was captured and burnt to the stake. The Templars were cornered, and just when it seemed they were finished forever, a glimmer of hope arose from a seemingly certain end. They were to find a safe haven as well as an ally. But not in France. In fact, in a country in a desperate struggle for independence against the English. The country of Scotland. For some, Scotland's hope of independence had died with the death of William Wallace. However, to the King of Scotland, Robert the Bruce, the arrival of the Templars gave him a new secret weapon. Their experience, gained over 200 years of fighting the mighty armies of Islam, had made them expert in combat and warfare, and more than a match for any army brought before them. In 1314, the Templars, allied with Robert the Bruce and his army, took to the fields of Bannockburn in the long-awaited showdown with the English. Robert the Bruce's foresight paid off. The 25,000-strong English army suffered a humiliating defeat at the hands of only 6,500 men. The dream of an independent Scotland had finally been achieved. The Templars had brought themselves back from the brink of destruction, and never again would they allow themselves to be destroyed. This time, they would control the country by controlling its kings. And in order to preserve their secret order, the Templars would have to die, or more precisely, the name would have to die. The Templars who had escaped Europe were finally laid to rest in Roslyn Chapel, Scotland, which stands to this day as sign of their presence in Britain. Their descendants became the true power of Scotland. In 1603, the death of Queen Elizabeth I left England without an heir to the throne. By virtue of descent, King James V of Scotland became King of England. In doing so, Scotland and England joined to form a new kingdom, and the power that the Templars held over Scotland spread to give them a firm grip on the whole of Great Britain. For over 100 years, the Templars concealed their activities, fading into the background until they were little known and little remembered. However, they did not cease to keep a firm grip on Britain. All the time they were planning, regrouping, and infiltrating positions of power in all corners of the kingdom. In 1717, the Templars made their reappearance in Europe. They had grown in both number and strength, and were now ready to coin a new identity, free from their reputation of the past, and given credibility by none other than the monarchy and aristocracy of England. And the name they chose for themselves was a name that would be known by many, but understood by a few. This new name, the Freemasons. The new identity and the grandeur of its members afforded the Masons with respect and dignity. The first royal member of the Freemasons was Frederick, Prince of Wales. The latest members include Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, and consort to the current Queen of England, Elizabeth II, who herself is a grand patron to the Masons. However, behind closed doors, the Freemasons were free to indulge in the secret rites and rituals handed down to them by their ancestors. And these became the basis of their levels of membership, called degrees. The Freemasons were not content with power in Britain alone. Their ambitions were far greater. In the years to come, the world would witness Europe and America being plagued by wars and revolutions, each more devastating than the other. However, These would not be, as commonly believed, the spontaneous effects of a downtrodden people, but in fact schemes created by the exclusive few driven by hunger for absolute power. All this would take place from the very country from which they had fled centuries earlier and would come to the base for their global domination. In 18th century France, the majority of the population was very poor, whilst the aristocracy and royalty lived a life of luxury and extravagance. There existed a wide gulf between the two classes. The Freemasons would use this to make the pledge for power, resulting in the biggest upheaval in French history. The Masons took advantage of the growing atmosphere of anger amongst the French and used it to achieve their own aims with a carefully planned propaganda war. They completely controlled the media system and used it to sway the tide of public opinion. The newspapers were geared into calling for the end of the monarchy and the establishment of a society based on liberty, equality, and fraternity. The Masons' vast amounts of wealth were used to influence the political landscape of France. Politicians funded by the Masons promoted the Masonic ideology. The secret lodges of the Masons were open to members of the French army. High-ranking officers and generals were indoctrinated to the Freemasons' way of thinking. With the people, the politicians, and the military of France under Masonic control, the Masons could finally strike. On the 14th of July, 1789, a group of people stormed the Bastille, a prison in Paris. This sign of resistance against the French authorities triggered off a massive response all over France. People in villages and towns expressed their hatred for the system, symbolized by the monarchy. But it was not until 1793 that the French anger would be cooled. On the 21st of January of the same year, King Louis XVI was beheaded in front of a crowd, heralding an end to the French monarchy and paving the way for another Masonic-controlled state in Europe. With the monarchy gone, it seemed as if nothing stood between the Masons and complete control of France. However, what took place would leave the Freemasons in a serious dilemma, and what was to come next was not exactly in accordance with the Masonic plan. A young soldier by the name of Napoleon Bonaparte was about to lead France into a bloody war with Europe, and instead of dancing to the Masonic tune, Napoleon declared himself the Emperor of France. Napoleon was forced to abdicate from his throne in 1814 and was exiled to the island of Corsica. However, in 1815, Napoleon arrived in Paris again, raising a new army ready for a fresh war in Europe. The Masons had a big problem on their hands. Britain and her Masonic allies could not afford to maintain a long-term war against Napoleon without risking bankruptcy. Help came from an unlikely source. Nathan Rothschild was the head of a leading banking family, but because of their status as Jews, they were forced to work from the shadows of others. Rothschild seized the opportunity to liberate his people and offered a loan, demanding in return recognition of the Jews as equals to their European counterparts and the right to openly do business. If the Masons refused, the money could always go to Napoleon. The Masons had no choice but to accept, and the loan transaction was completed. In 1815, British, Dutch, and Prussian soldiers landed in Waterloo, Belgium, where they met Napoleon's forces and defeated them. Napoleon was captured this time, never to return. France was finally under Masonic control. Although historians make little mention of the Masonic involvement in the Revolution, the Masons themselves have to reveal their shadowy movements during this important period in history. In 1904, Marquis de Rossambeau, a Freemason, said before a packed audience, "Freemasonry has worked in a hidden but constant manner to prepare the revolution. We are then in complete agreement that Freemasonry was the only author of the revolution, and the applause which I receive from the left, and to which I am little accustomed, proves, gentlemen, that you acknowledge with me that it was Masonry which made the French Revolution." When the so-called founding fathers of America landed on Plymouth Rock, not only did they bring with them disfranchised people, they also brought the Freemasonic elements of Europe. The injustices which the fathers of America were escaping from in Europe was also to be found in the new land, in the form of a tyrannical British regime. In order to gain complete dominance of the new state, the Masons used the same methods they had used to gain control of France. Although the British monarchy was run by the Masons, The American War of Independence was a necessary action, and the people involved in the war were expendable for the Masons to fulfill their dream. Emotions of the people were manipulated into anger, and just like France, anger turned into war. This time, however, previous mistakes would not be repeated. The near defeat the Masons faced against Napoleon and his army in Europe taught the Masons a lesson. Any forthcoming leaders of the resistance must follow the Masonic agenda. The best way to do this was to ensure the leader himself was a Mason, and the leader who took the war to the British was none other than George Washington. On the 4th of July, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was made. On the 17th of October, 1781, the British were finally defeated and surrendered the colonies to the Americans, and the world's first Masonic state was born, a nation that would represent Masonry in every way. A sign of the Masonic presence in America is plainly visible on the dollar bill, which carries a picture of George Washington, the first Freemasonic president in the world, and a picture of the Freemasonic symbol of the so-called all-seeing one eye. Historically, the control and manipulation of political opinion has been the Freemasons' main weapon in gaining control of countries and states. Once in control of the rulers and politicians of a country, laws and political structures could be changed in accordance with their agenda. However, since restricting the body does not necessarily mean restricting the mind, the Freemason recognizes that their plan for a global government hinges completely on subduing the masses to their agenda, and thus eliminating opposition to their cause. And the greatest threat to their plan, posing more danger than any army or law, is the threat of a free-thinking mind. In order to eliminate this threat and to achieve their objective, the Masons have set about the boldest plan ever devised: the complete control of every aspect of human life, your life. And the weapons they are using against you are in your very homes, entertaining you and your children, and gradually indoctrinating you without you even realizing. In today's society, people are spending more and more time engaged with modern media, television, cinema, computer games, the internet. Popular fiction and popular music are an integral part of our lives. Yet these provide a vast expanse on information which you are taking, either consciously or subconsciously, into your mind. Information on society ranging from ideals and morals and the difference between right and wrong to the way societies and economies should be structured is passed before you every single day. These media play a significant role in providing the basis for determining an individual's view of the world and everything that exists. Thus, any one group in complete control of this information placed on these media will in effect have the power to indoctrinate practically the entire populace of the world to their way of thinking. And it is this fact the Freemasons are exploiting. The Masons are using the entertainment industry in particular to condition people to their way of thinking, either openly or subliminally. The methods they use vary, but the goal is the same: to impose their beliefs, their ideology, and their objectives on you in such a way that you begin to think of them as your own. Evidence of their presence within popular entertainment is widespread. Masonic involvement in the industry is not a new thing. Hailed as one of history's great composers, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, a Freemason himself, composed a symphony, which was an open display of Freemasonry. The symphony is based on a story taken from ancient Egyptian mythology of Isis and Osiris. The pagan rites of ancient Egyptian mythology form, through the Kabbalah, one of the fundamental aspects of Freemasonry. It is from these same pagan origins of Egypt that the symbol of the one eye stems. Evidence of the Freemasonic presence is also commonly found in the popular music of more recent times. Michael Jackson, hailed today as the King of Pop, regarded as the greatest entertainer of all time, responsible for producing the best-selling album in the world, may not be known to be linked with the Freemasons. However, the cover of his Dangerous album has some interesting features. On it, the Freemasonic symbol of the one eye can be found, and also a picture of a watery lake, behind which lay burning flames. It seems as though anyone entering into the water would really be entering into the fire. The cover also has on it a picture of a bald-headed man, well known to the occult as Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley himself was a Freemason who became a Satanist and wrote the book The New Law of Man, which stated in it that it would one day replace the Quran as the law of man. Links between Freemasonry and the occult do not end there. The products of the masonically controlled music industry are riddled with subliminal satanic messages. Backtracking is the means of placing recorded messages into soundtracks in such a way that they only become intelligible when the track is replayed backwards. When it's played forwards, however, the listener would be totally unaware that a message is being played. Although the listener may be unaware, the subconscious mind can pick up and understand the messages, and in the long term, these can be stored in the subconscious mind and may actually affect a person's behavior or judgment. In many ways, backtracking is like a form of hypnotism or brainwashing and has the power to be very destructive. The first example of backtracking is from the famous female artist Madonna. It features on one of her most famous albums and is taken from the song Like a Prayer. Played forwards, the song sounds like this. However, as you will hear, it is not God that the prayer appears to be directed at, but Satan. When played backwards, the words, O hear us, Satan, are clearly audible. Freemasonic One Eye has also been featured on the video for one of Madonna's songs, where Madonna actually appears with the one eye coming out from her forehead. Madonna also appears on a video for one of her songs, where she is standing on some writing. Closer examination will reveal that this writing is actually Arabic, the language of the Quran. Another example of backtracking is taken from the group The Eagles, and the song is called Hotel California.
We are all just prisoners here of our own device. In the master's chambers, they've gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember.
And now the song backwards. The words, yeah, Satan, can be clearly heard when the song is played backwards. As well as containing this message, the song itself is a story in its own right. The California of the song is not a hotel, but is actually a street in America called California. It is on this very street that the headquarters of a church were founded, but it was not the type of church that one may think. Instead, it is a church that some have called the Church of Satan. It was headed and founded by Anthony Sanz de Levy, the author of the Satanic Bible. It appears that the teachings of this church may have become the integral belief of many famous personalities in the entertainment industry, from rock groups to more mainstream artists. Some have gone as far as promoting the church and its beliefs. One alleged member of the church is the lead singer of the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger, who wrote the song Sympathy for the Devil. It seems that what originally started as a Christian organization later turned into a heretic religion, even for the Christians, and now has satanic elements mixed in. The entire entertainment world is rife with evidence of the Freemasons' presence. Openly or subliminally, their agenda and beliefs and ideals are propagated. This is especially evident within the film industry, on the big screen and the small screen, from big budget Hollywood films to simple cartoons. The Masons have not left anything to chance in promoting their message of a global government. Matt Groening, the creator of one of the most popular cartoon series in television history, The Simpsons, is a self-confessed anarchist. Matt Groening himself has openly declared that he wanted to get his own political ideas across within his work. But he wanted to do this in such a way that people would find it easy to accept his ideas. And the means he chose to this was a clever little cartoon called The Simpsons. So what exactly is The Simpsons teaching us and our children? There are many lessons being programmed into us. These include disregard for authority, either parental and governmental, that bad manners and disobedience is the way to attain status amongst people, and that ignorance is trendy and cool, whereas knowledge is unfashionable. However, what is especially worrying is the Masonic undertones of one episode in particular, the episode in which the father figure of the family, Homer Simpson becomes obsessed with a group called the Stonecutters, or should it be called the Freemasons? Upon joining the group, his fellow members find a birthmark on him, a mark that makes the rest of the group declare him to be the chosen one.
You are the chosen one whom the sacred parchment prophesied would lead us to glory.
But with his newfound honor and dignity, he, Homer Simpson, fools himself into thinking that he is God.
I always wondered if there was a God, and now I know there is, and it's me.
Some may dismiss it as nothing more than a children's cartoon, a bit of harmless fun. But the influence it has on audience makes it a very effective means of propaganda, indoctrinating a people without them even realizing. Its very creators admit that they are propagating their political ideas to the audience in a covert manner. Ideas spread through the domestic television can reach a far wider audience than movies and cinema. And it is through this media that a new concept is being introduced. The concept of one global leader. Famous for his novel, The Jungle Book, Rudyard Kipling, another Freemason, wrote a book called The Man Who Would One Day Be King. This was later made into a big-budget Hollywood film, starring the likes of Sean Connery, Michael Caine, and Saeed Jaffery. The book is the story of two soldiers that journey to a country on the edge of India, a country that was once rumored to contain great riches, that once belonged to Alexander the Great. Upon reaching the country, the two soldiers are captured by the local inhabitants, a people called Kafirs, named after their country, Kafiristan. When the two men are about to be killed, a necklace is discovered around the neck of one of the soldiers. Engraved on it is the symbol of the Masonic One Eye. The Kafirs revere him as their god and attribute to him the divine attribute of immortality. The man himself first regards himself as a king, and then in his newfound power begins to regard himself really as being a god. From the Muslim perspective, if not that of others, the similitudes that can be drawn from this story are very interesting. The Muslim scriptures, called Hadith, contain many prophecies of the Prophet Muhammad. In these, it is prophesied that a man would arise from amidst the Kafirs, which means infidels in Islam, who would be recognized by his one eye and would be made a world leader, claiming first to be a king and then later to being God, and that he will seem immortal until an appointed time. In another film, the concept of a global leader and global government is also strongly propagated. In 1996, the film Independence Day broke all box office records, becoming the seventh highest ranking film of all time. It entranced audiences around the world with a fictional story of an alien invasion on Earth. However, deep within the film, subliminal messages can be found, indicating the Freemasonic presence and the Freemasonic agenda. In the film, there is a military base known as Area 51. It is from here that the military offensive is launched, on which the salvation of the whole world and the future of its inhabitants depends. The entrance to this installation is a pyramid, on which is engraved the symbol of the One Eye. The film shows the USA as the forerunner in establishing a global offensive, involving all the nations of the world, an offensive which is devised, controlled, and commanded by one man, one overall leader. The film is part of an upsurge of films and television serials on the topics of aliens, UFOs, and invasions threatening the whole of mankind. These are gradually fueling the growing interest and public unrest on the issue. This is just one of the many ways in which the Freemasons are paving the way for their global government. The Freemasons are using a number of approaches to drive fear into the hearts of the masses, instilling in them the need for greater protection, and thereby the need for greater security. A need that could only be fulfilled by a worldwide coalition government protecting the interests of all human beings across the globe.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?